Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Childcare surely should not be this stressful, sir, for so many families and parents. 51551, back to routine for so many this week. But childcare chaos reigns for an awful lot of families. Kate, good afternoon.
Hi, Cormac. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Not too bad. It's extremely stressful for you, is it?
It is. Look, it's stressful for a lot of people out there. I think, I mean, if we weren't all so tired, we'd be out in the streets rioting. But I think that for me, I have a three-year-old in crèche, which is great. You know, we avail of the government subsidy. It helps us afford his care. But I have 11-month-old twins due to go in September. Recently told they don't have a space. They can't get the staff. We now need to wait at least another year. What happens then? Are they going to get a space then? We don't know.
So what happens?
I'll be about 2 years out of the workforce. So, you know, it's not ideal, and we're not happy about it. So,
I can imagine. So what do you mean you're out of the workforce? Is there no other crèche?
Well, I'm going to, so we're on a waiting list for three other crèches. I did look in other places. We're not on waiting list for them. It's not ideal to be travelling out to other parts of the city to be dropping if one of us is commuting one way and I'm going the other. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're in a bit of a predicament about what's the best option. Like, I am privileged. My partner can support us for the next year while I take the time off and mind the babies. But again, it's all a bit up in the air. And I think a lot of people in our situation, and a lot of people aren't as privileged as me. Do you know, like, there are single parents out there, there's people who have to go back to work and they've got no options.
But it sounds as if you're doing this willy-nilly, Kate. You've tried three other crèches. So you've tried four crèches, you say, altogether.
Five out in total, three were on waiting list. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that's normal, Cormac. Like, people are out there doing 10 crèches plus, you know, checking the surrounding areas.
Yeah.
When I was looking for a three-year-old back then, you know, I was looking even at 10 crèches when I was emailing. I kind of felt it went a bit more streamlined this time. So, you know, like, I'd been around and I knew what to expect, but they'd been on the waiting list quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, there's a government subsidy for us to be able to afford to pay towards their costs. Their childcare costs, but on the other side, the crèches can't raise their fees. They can't pay the staff in costs, you know, with the cost of living crisis. So there's a big chain, and there's a lot of links broken in the chain, you know. And you know, my mind's like, oh no, are they going to pull out of the core funding now? Is my little boy going to come home here? I'm taking on three of them. How long will I be out of work then? You know.
Yeah, so there's too much uncertainty for your family there. And look, you're talking to the congregation here. I'm in this. My youngest is four. I was going to say three. He would have killed me. So I know it's normal to look for multiple crèches. I know the uncertainty and the cost of it as well. Can I ask you this though? You say you're on a waiting list for your twins.
Yes.
How old are the twins, did you say?
They're 11 months old.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they've been on since I was pregnant.
Okay. So really, really, so before they were born?
Yes, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a great crack.
I know what you mean about tiredness. So tell me this, so you're on a waiting list. Do you know how long you'll have to wait before they get a space?
They're guaranteed a place where my little boy is now in September 2026.
What are you complaining about?
I know, yeah.
So you have to wait a year plus. Oh my goodness gracious!
And I've been out obviously a year with maternity leave and stuff. And you know, look, the way the workforce advances these days, AI and stuff, you panic. Like you're missing out on a lot of things. So you know.
So you're kind of sacrificing a year of your work to look after your children.
Yeah, and I think saying it that way as well sounds very like, oh, I want my work over my children.
No,
it's
I know.
Not that at all.
Yeah, I didn't
you know,
mean
you
that.
Want
yeah,
both.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, sorry. You want both those things. You want to be there, a good parent, you know, a good mom and spend time. And I'm you know, lucky to be able to spend all this time with them while they're this age. But I also want to be out there working and contributing to the economy, but also like, you know, improving my skills and enjoying my work.
Exactly.
You know?
It's normal. And that's kind of what, I mean, that's your right as well. And in many ways, I didn't want to frame the question like that. But I think, is it not fair to say that the system we have forces people, forces family, and dare I say it, very often mums, to sacrifice their careers in order to look after the kids because they can't make childcare work or whatever the case may be. Will you stay with me, Kate? 51551. This is the case for so many families. Brenda, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you? What's your point in childcare, please?
Good, good. I'm a manager of a service in Carlow.
A creche, yeah. Okay.
Yes, yeah, a creche in Carlow, sorry. Yes, and Kate did hit off a few of the points that challenges that we are facing. So the fee freeze is a major, major problem for all services across the country. Mm-hmm. We were, when core funding was introduced in 2022, I think it was, we hadn't increased our fees since 2019. So therefore, our fees are still sitting as they were in 2019, and we cannot increase them.
Because that's the
agreement that was set out in core funding when it was introduced in 2022 with the department, yeah. And it has not changed, so it hasn't.
Okay.
You know, we see a huge issue. There's problems with our AIM, our access and inclusion model. AIM was introduced to, I suppose, be more inclusive and, you know, for children with any, you know, struggles or anything like that, mm-hmm. to include them in the services. AIM doesn't offer any support towards holidays for staff. If we employ somebody for AIM, there is no funding in there for holidays, bank holidays, maternity leave, anything like that.
So you say, so effectively, that's another cost on you, the manager of the creche.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. So yes. What about...
Yeah, we're taking on costs.
You, I mean, here I have this, you couldn't write this in one sense. Here I have on one line, Kate, who can't get childcare for her twins who are 11 months. Mm-hmm. And then Brenda, mm-hmm. you're a creche manager and you're telling me, I see in my notes here, that you've just closed down the baby room in your creche. Why?
Yeah. We've recently closed it down because due to a recent inspection we've had, we had to make the decision because from recommendations on that inspection, it was recommended that we have two staff to three babies. We're talking under 1 year. So our service is quite small. We only have three children under the age of one. Mm-hmm. And it was recommended that we have two staff for three children.
Now, my instinct is to say, look, that's what the experts deem is necessary. If it's my baby in that room, I want three staff as well. I mean, is that not fair?
Three staff for two babies?
What are you saying is the regulation? Two for three babies, is that it?
So the regulation is one staff for three babies.
Okay.
The regulation is. But it was from that inspection, we were advised that we should have two staff, two educators to three children.
Okay, so beyond the regulation?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Why?
Absolutely. I mean, so that on the day of inspection, a child was upset and so that child didn't have to wait or didn't have to be distracted or, you know, that there was a staff member on hand to attend to that child.
And did you say, look, that's beyond the official regulation?
Yeah. We, you know, within reason, we did argue it. But, I mean, our hands are tied. We have to do everything. We have to comply. So,
therefore, we have to.
And our only option was to take the pressure off and close the room.
Oh, my God.
So, therefore, there's three babies.
Tell me this, Brenda. What are the parents who are really, I mean, we know from Kate's story, who are really depending on your service, really depending in your baby room? What did they say to you?
At that time, we were lucky we actually didn't have to let any children go because between the to and fro and with the inspection report, the babies that were in that room turned one. So we didn't have to let them go. So we were able to move them over to our wobbler room.
Okay, by a stroke of luck then. But I'm sure you had other parents contact you and say, look, is there any place, please, in your creche for my infant?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I had to ring the three parents that the children were due to start in that room and notify them that our room was closing. And let me tell you, that was not a nice phone call to make with those parents. And understandably, they were upset. They were frustrated. They were waiting to go back to work. And I completely understand it. But I mean, it's out of our control.
And you also say paperwork is an absolute nightmare for you. What do you mean?
Absolute nightmare. Paperwork every day. There's changes coming in. There's different regulations. There's different requirements. There's different paperwork that's required. You know, there's paperwork required this year for the ECCE scheme that was never required before. And we have to retain and hold on file. And this is not only just me with paperwork. It's the other, my colleagues within the service also. Their paperwork and everything has increased tenfold in the last couple of years.
I'm sure an awful lot of creche managers and owners can relate to that. I want to ask you one more question. There's another caller on the line. I'll go back to Kate as well for 1 second. But you say, you say, Brenda, that you see kids in your creche for 10, 11 hours a day and you feel sorry for the parents who have no other option. Am I right?
Absolutely, of course. No one wants to leave their children for that length of, you know, that many hours of the day. There's nobody wants to do that. But, I mean, parents are being forced, you know, through inflation, the cost of living, that they have to, they have to do that. They have no choice. And I see people coming, you know, and speeding in the gate to try get their children last minute and apologising because their children are here so late in the afternoon or early in the morning.
Mommy and daddy guilt is an absolute scourge, and any parent will know. Say on the line, Brenda, is that any solace for you, Kate, if I can go back to you for a second, that you're now forced with the decision to stay at home, you can't get a childcare place, but at least are you saved the mommy guilt in your case?
Well, you're always going to have mom guilt.
true.
But I do feel that, you know, like I said about the government subsidy for us earlier, it does work for us, but it doesn't feel like the provider of the creche is supported by the government. Not being able to raise your fees post-pandemic is a bit ridiculous. The life has changed completely, you know, so they need to be able to pay staff accordingly. They need to be getting people in. We need to make sure that we feel safe that they have enough staff in there, you know. So I'd rather be able to pay, you know, 80, 100 euro a month extra with the fees they increase rather than them pull out of the core funding and all of a sudden I'm paying 500-600 euro per child more.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just not feasible. And like you said, the system is just broken overall. It needs to be, you know, considered, and it needs to then be available, accessible to everyone, like the child, the children, the parents, the providers, the carers, you know, they work too. They've got families, you know, like it shouldn't just be, yeah, we can support you, Kate, go off, you can put your three kids in, you know, but then people are working on minimum wage, trying to manage all these rooms and stuff. It just doesn't work. It really doesn't work at the moment.
Well, and the government say it's in the programme for government. They want to reduce the cost of childcare to 200 euro per month per child through the National Childcare Scheme. But we're waiting to see that. It could come in the budget. Some progress. Stay with me, Kate. Stay with me, Brenda. Isabel, I believe, is a Spanish woman working in Ireland. Hola, Isabel.
Hi, hola.
¿Cómo estás? ¿Cómo está tu familia?
Ah, muy bien, gracias.
Your family is good, but childcare is not good, is that it?
No, childcare is not, definitely not.
What is the problem in your case?
So my firstborn was born a couple of years ago, she's 22 months now, and like I only realized how hard it was to get a childcare provided, like a spot in a creche when I got pregnant, and like I signed her up in a wait list for when I was maybe 4 months, and she only got a place a year and 8 months later, more or less. So almost 2 years in wait list before she was granted a spot in the creche. And now, as they were mentioning before, the creche has left the government plan. So the fees from September have increased by 34%, no less.
Oh my goodness! So the creche has left the government scheme, so they've had to increase fees. Because once you're in taking the government scheme as a creche, you can't increase your fees, as Brenda was explaining. But if you're outside of that system, you can. Wow, that's a third of an increase, Isabel.
It is, and they were saying that there will be more increase down the line, so this is only the first one coming in. Now, without the NCS, the full price is 1,420, if I am not mistaken, minus the NCS, which is about 350 euros. It's still more than 1,000 euros per child. Now, it's a big chunk.
Yeah, it's a mortgage, really, for an awful lot of people, or it used to be rent.
If you have one child, if you have more than one child, it's two mortgages. Like.
And do you have more than one child in creche?
But I'm expecting my second in about 3-4 weeks' time.
Oh,
so
congratulations,
I will
Isabel.
Have two. Thanks. I will have definitely two in the creche at the same time for about 2 years.
Okay.
And it's crippling.
It's not good that it's crippling, and it's not good that it's stressful, particularly, I suppose, when you're expecting your child in a few weeks' time. Can I ask, is this a ridiculous question, Isabel? Have you looked into a childcare place for your child due in a few weeks?
Oh, absolutely. Like, literally the day after I took the test, before I went to the doctor, I went to the crèche and I asked them if they could put a name now.
Oh, Isabel.
Yeah.
So that's, you realize
that's the level,
Isabel.
That's the level of desperation. It sounds ridiculous. It should not be like this. You should not, like, no one should be waiting for more than a week or two for a spot in a crèche. Like, it only happens in Ireland, I think.
Isabel, I just cannot believe my ears. You realize you were pregnant, and before you even went to the GP or the doctor, you went to the childcare place.
Yeah. I was going to drop my kid anyway, and I need them to know because I need to secure a place, because I need to go back to work. So it goes, everything goes in a circle, and I'm not the only one. And this is a nationwide problem, and it affects all families from all backgrounds.
It's the same in Spain, Isabel. It's the same in Spain, I suppose.
No, it's not.
Go on.
No, education in Spain is funded by the government. So even though there is a small fee, which I believe is about maybe 200, 300 euros, depends where you live and your means, because it's means tested. But it's not a business. It's like something that is needed.
Okay,
it's not
so
seen as a
Isabel,
business.
The power of Liveline. I'm going to take you right now and place you in your home place in Spain. And you've realized you're pregnant. What do? You call the childcare provider immediately, do you?
No, there is no need.
Why?
No, I will wait for my maternity, because there is guaranteed a spot for everyone.
Guaranteed?
For the most part. Yeah,
no.
there is
not
enough.
Not locally,
there is
surely.
And you're assigned the nearest crèche or the nearest school near to you, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, it's a different world.
Stay on the line, Isabel, please. Stay on the line. Kate, would you like that system? That it's a government system, you're guaranteed a space for about 200 euro near you.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it ridiculous that, like, Isabel, you had to go down after the doctors? I mean, that story is common. You know, like you were saying, the WhatsApp groups are popping with all the panic. And, you know, like you said, the system is broken. There's all three people here at different parts of the system, and we can't be in a situation where I'm now maybe potentially have to pay 3 grand to put 3 children in crash. Like, that wipes my salary.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's no point in being in the workforce just for the sake of being in the workforce, you know. It's just very sad that we can't get it right here. You know, it does seem like it needs a big overhaul. And it, like, if you bring the national care system down to 200 euro per child, does that mean that the creches are allowed to increase their fees now? Does it mean they're going to be paid accordingly? Does it mean that the childcare graduates are going to be coming out and be paid salaries? Like, is everybody going to be supported? Or is it just, look, yeah, you shouted loudest, we'll give you a bit of support. It needs to work overall. We need to not be panicked. We're stressed enough as parents. We're all these problems going on in our head as it is. Like, we need to be going into the system knowing we can all move together and our careers and our children are being cared for.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be this stressful. I mean, they were the first words out of my mouth, because I know from personal experience and talking to other parents as well in the same situation, God almighty, it shouldn't be this stressful to raise kids or get childcare in this country. But you'll spend nearly 3 grand if you could get childcare space, Kate. Isabel, you'll be spending, if you get a childcare space for your newborn, please God, in a few weeks' time, about 2 grand.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe you're lucky, maybe you can afford it, but an awful lot of people simply can't.
It's going to be very tight. We were doing the math, and it's going to be very, very tight for a couple of years, the 2 years that they will be at the same time in the crèche, 2-3 years. But we cannot afford to quit our jobs either, you know, because we can't.
Yeah, for obvious reasons,
So we have no choice, and this goes in a loop. This goes in a loop in the end. Like, you have working class people that are almost poor at the end of the month because of childcare.
Yeah, that are poor. I mean, you've no disposable income, really.
Not much less.
The working poor, so to speak. I suppose you're happy to be able to make ends meet an awful lot of families. So you say, Kay, three people with the same situation. Far more, I can tell you, and an awful lot to 51551. Keep your stories coming to us. Stay with me, Isabel and Brendan, Kate. Sharon, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. You're listening with great interest, I'd say. You're a creche owner.
Well, I'd like to say I'm not a creche owner, actually, okay. But I'm a preschool owner,
preschool. Okay. Yeah. And you know, by God, how important childcare is in the early years of a child's life.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I have a master's in early childhood education, and the studies are all there. You know, UNICEF even have a study that says that in the first few years of life, more than 1 million neural connections are formed every second. And that's at a pace that is never, ever repeated again during your lifetime.
Wow. 1 million neural connections every second. That's incredible.
Every second.
And that's the first year of life or two.
That's the first few years of life. So those formative years before children start school, they're crucial for their long-term well-being. You know, how they develop into being adults and the life that they're basically going to lead. What's called it? You know, it's hugely interesting and very, very important.
So are you talking there, Sharon, how settled a child is, how comfortable or confident a child is, how social a child is?
Their social and emotional, personal development, all of that, everything that you've just mentioned.
Brenda was saying, and I go back to this, and I ask this question as a parent who's done it, so no judgment whatsoever here, but it's the conundrum that an awful lot of parents find themselves. But Brenda's saying, parents who have no other option but to leave a child in creche for 10, 11 hours. I mean,
absolutely, absolutely. And you're dead right. No judgment. I did it myself back in the day when my eldest was a baby. I did it myself. Absolutely no judgment whatsoever. We all have to do what we have to do. But I think, you know, having reinvented myself and having studied and opened this business like in 2009, I'm blown away by how important it is. And that's why it's so important that the people who are working with our children, the young children, that they're, you know, the right people. And there's huge problems in the sector, huge problems with staffing and retaining staff and getting the right people to work in the sector.
Well, people are not paid well enough, I would venture, an awful lot of people think, who work in early years education or creches. And I'm not talking about anybody here, obviously. But I think, you know, we were talking about essential workers during the COVID years. I mean, childcare providers are essential. In today's society and economy. But I mean, I don't know if the fees are appropriate, if the pay is appropriate. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're probably overworked, undervalued, and yeah, the pay is not where it should be for, you know, the level. There was a huge call there probably in the last 10 to 15 years for the early years sector to, you know, professionalise themselves, become degree-led, and the majority now are at least minimum level 6, but I would hazard a guess and say that quite a substantial number of the sector are degree-led, level 8, and as many as I know in my close circle would be level 8 and even master's.
Okay. But I suppose it's the pressure. The quality is there, but the pressure and the conditions and so on. Can I ask you finally, I'm going to move on in just a second, but can I ask you to, what would your message be, Sharon, as a preschool owner, to parents who do, you know, who have no option but to leave their kids in creches or early childcare years providers for so many hours a day and who feel guilty about it?
Oh, absolutely. The guilt I felt myself was just shocking. First of all, I don't think they should feel guilty. Absolutely not. We all have to do what we have to do. But I would say, do your research. Just because you have to, just don't take the first place necessarily. That's given what's for it. But I think the problem in it, is that it's not even that the government and the departments make it easy for providers to enter into the sector. You know, if I wanted to go full daycare tomorrow and offer places to some of these parents, it's very, very difficult. You have to go through a whole planning process. You have to go to TUSLA for fit for inspection. you know, I think there's corners that could be cut there.
Well, you couldn't cut those corners, in fairness, because in
I mean the administration, the paperwork, the speed at which some of these, I mean, you're talking 6 and 8 months and stuff like that. Like, there has to be ways to speed up planning applications in a sector that's on its knees the way it is with such demand.
Yeah.
You know, and the same with fit for purpose inspections. Like, if the service provider's meeting all the deadlines, you know, the people that are coming out to do the inspections or pass the planning should also be required to meet certain deadlines, just to speed the whole process up and to open up more facilities.
Well, I'd love to know if people agree with that. 51551. Can I go back to Isabel, who's expecting her second child, I think you said, Isabel, in a few weeks' time? In a way, you should not be worrying about childcare at this point. You should be totally focused and trying to relax and trying to enjoy this period in the run-in. But is it worrying you? Does it keep you awake at night?
I mean, for me at the moment, it's a bit farther away. And the fact that I put the name of my second child down so soon, and there is already a child in the creche, I think for siblings, there might be a preference. At least that's what I'm hoping. But it's like a year and a month almost in the future. So it's not something that is keeping me awake just yet. But with my first, it did. And it kind of like messed up my pregnancy, not my pregnancy, my maternity leave, because I was thinking, how are we going to make it? Like, I have to go back to work, and we don't have a place in a creche. Who's going to look after the child? How much is it going to cost? You know, can we trust the person? Like, there are so many questions, and so many moms don't have the choice, and that's the problem, that they don't want to quit their jobs, but then they have no choice if they don't have a childcare place in place. You know, so, yeah, it's a vicious circle of issues. It's, as they were saying before, it's not just the administration for the creches or the not finding the right people to work in them or keeping the staff. It's bigger than that. Like, it's a whole massive problem that is not being solved from the root.
Well, you know what? How will I make it should not be a question that should be on any mother or parent's mind during maternity. That is for sure. This is a huge problem. We're getting so many calls. Keep them coming to 51551. We haven't even mentioned, by the way, the childcare providers in chief in this country right now. That's granny and granddad. And that causes an awful lot of pressure and arguments sometimes as well. Liveline at RT.ie. Kate, Brenda, Isabel, Sharon, muchas gracias. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Anita, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cormac. How are you?
Not too bad. You're very welcome to Liveline, Anita. You went to a recent performance at the Bord Gáis Theatre, Calamity Jane. And you say there was certainly calamity at Calamity Jane. Why?
Well, without a shadow of a doubt. So, listen, the first half of the show went off brilliant. We were having a great time. And then it went to the interval. We went out, got our kind of walk around, bit of a break, and I felt that the interval was going on ages and that I was waiting for the announcement for everybody to go back to their seats. And we kind of went in ourselves, and there was lots of murmuring going on, and you could tell that everybody in the audience was waiting for the show to start. And there was no announcements until about 40 minutes we had been waiting, and an announcement came on to say that they were having a technical difficulty and the bar would remain open.
Oh.
So that told me very quickly, well, if they're encouraging people to go to the bar, you're talking about at least another 15-20 minutes for somebody to have one drink. So and you know, that's all very well for people who are making the night of it and are able to have a drink. I was there with my partner and my teenage daughter. We had driven in, so we weren't having a drink. There was a family behind us with young kids. They weren't having a drink. There was people beside us who had travelled down from Belfast, so they weren't having a drink. So we were all kind of just sitting there wondering what the hell was going on.
Okay.
So
what did
at
you
this
do?
Stage,
so the announcement comes on, some technical difficulties. The bar will remain open. Please enjoy the whatever. So you go out to the bar again, do you?
Well, we kind of just sat there because we weren't interested in having a drink. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just sat there and went, God, I wonder what's going on.
Okay.
So at this stage, my daughter, who is neurodivergent, was getting very antsy, and we were on borrowed time, as it was. And she was like, can we go home? Can we go home? And I said, well, let's just wait another 10 minutes. So she then, as she would, 10 minutes is up. What are we doing? So at this stage, we had been on break for an hour and 10 minutes. And I said, OK, it's 20 to 10. I'd be really surprised if the show comes back on. My partner went out. He spoke to one of the ushers. They were able to tell him that actually one of the cast members had become seriously ill just at the interval, and that they were waiting on an ambulance. And that's all the information she had.
Okay.
So he came back in and told us, the people beside. And at this stage, we had already seen people leaving. Lots of people started to leave.
Yeah.
And the group beside us from Belfast said, well, we have to get back to Belfast. So they left. And my daughter just, we were out of time with her.
Yeah.
And she was like, I just need to go home now.
She wanted to leave.
So,
fair enough. So you're an hour and 10 minutes into the interval at this point.
Yeah. And we didn't know whether the show was coming back on. You know, whether there was going to be an understudy or anything. We didn't know anything.
I think
what frustrated us the most was the lack of communication.
So this information that your partner got, that one of the cast members was ill, was that an announcement or was that imparted to your partner privately almost?
So he had just gone up to one of the bar staff who was handing out cards to people as they were leaving, if they wanted to email a complaint or a query to the theatre.
And I'd love to know, I'd love to know if anyone else was there and if this is chiming what Anita is saying with your experience as well. 51551, were you at Calamity Jane with the 1 hour, 10 minute interval? How did you get on? So how long, what did you do then? Did you wait a bit longer? Could you, or did you leave?
No, we just had to make the decision to leave. And as we were leaving, we saw the ambulance pull it up to the stage door. And we were like, God, it must be really serious. And then we were like, God, did somebody have a heart attack? Did somebody have a stroke?
Mm.
The rest of the cast, you know, if that happened, sure, they probably wouldn't be in any fit state to go back on.
Yeah.
So we just assumed that it definitely wasn't going on.
Okay.
So on the way home, then I penned an email to the Borgosh.
Go back. So you did leave without, and there was
no
announcement that the show has been cancelled, I'm sorry, or stay with us.
No,
when you were leaving, there was no other announcement, was there?
No other announcement at all.
So you left. So you penned an email saying?
So I basically penned an email saying that I had been in attendance, what had happened, the lack of communication, and that as an avid theatre goer, I go quite regularly to the Borgosh, that I would just love a voucher to cover me for the price of the ticket so I could go to another show.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had a response as of yet.
No response?
Nothing.
And do you think it's reasonable to request a voucher? You say the first part of the interval or the show before the interval was A1. It was good. Great.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. And, you know, I just wanted to see the second half of the show, to be perfectly honest with you.
Did it go back on, Anita?
I don't know. I haven't been able, I did kind of check online, but I wasn't able to find anything that said whether it did or it didn't. There was no mention of anything, which I found quite strange in itself. But I'd love to know if you were able to find out anything.
Well, I think we have raised your query, all right. We have a response from Borgosh Theatre. I just have it here. Actually, I'm sure you want to hear it. You're looking for a voucher.
I would love to hear it.
Well, wait till you hear. Firstly, by the way, were you there at Calamity Jane? Did it go back on? You can let us know to 51551. I've just been given this statement from Borgosh Energy Theatre. They say, regarding the stoppage at Calamity Jane on Friday night, due to the collapse and consequent head injury of a leading cast member after Act 1 of Friday night's performance of Calamity Jane, this is the 22nd of August, the performance was stopped, they say. The actor's welfare took precedence and was sent to hospital, while we also made every effort to ensure the show would proceed as planned. The show recommenced after a 90-minute delay, and Vinnie stayed overnight, the cast member, in the care of St. Vincent's Hospital. The final line here is, Bord Gáis Energy Theatre sincerely apologise for the inconvenience and disappointment caused by this unforeseen situation. Stoppages are rare, they say, but always a risk with live theatre production, and 1,800 of the 2,100 theatre goers on the night decided to stay despite the delay. We greatly appreciate our audience's patience and understanding during these exceptional circumstances and wish our cast member a very speedy recovery. Well, so do we, first and foremost.
Absolutely.
I hope that cast member makes a full recovery if he hasn't done so already. But I don't see any offer of a voucher, I must say, Anita.
No, and I suppose when I was doing a bit of research over the weekend, I discovered that as part of their terms and conditions, that they will refund if the performance is cancelled ahead of time. But in the small print, it says if for whatever reason, technical difficulty or illness, a performance is stopped, that they don't provide a refund, which I feel is quite disappointing because I'm a customer. I paid for a service of type and I didn't get what I paid for.
And you love going to these performances. You love going to these.
I do, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you go very often, Anita?
I do. And I've two shows booked between now and Christmas already.
You glutton. How dare you? The rest of us can't go anywhere. Well, so, and you've gone to the Bord Gáis very often.
Oh, yeah.
And you love it there.
And I've never... Yeah, love it, and I've never come across this before. And I would have thought that if this happened, they would have a protocol in place that would kick in, that the communication would be better. I mean, if they had said the show will recommence at 10 o'clock, which is the time it must have started going by what the response was, we then could have made the call to go, will we stay? Or do we need to go? And then that would have been on us.
Yeah. Or if you knew, for example, I don't know if this would have worked with your partner and your daughter. You say your daughter is neurodivergent. Because I'm looking here. You left when the interval was at 70 minutes. The show restarted at 90 minutes. So if you said to yourself, look, let's go for a 15-minute walk outside and we'll be back in good time for the interval to start and we can get a nice little bit of refreshment or fresh air. Would that have worked for you, I wonder?
Yeah, possibly. Absolutely. But at least we would have had the information to be able to make the decision. Mm. The problem is that we didn't know and we were all just left sitting there and we then just had to make the call that actually my daughter can't cope anymore. So we need to leave.
Yeah, I understand that as well. In fairness, I do understand that. And how much was your ticket, can I ask?
So, yeah, of course you can. So to be fair, these weren't the most expensive tickets that I've bought. So they were €50 each.
Okay, three tickets, that's €150. That's nothing to be sniffed at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a gift for my partner for his birthday.
Okay. Some gift. The way it turned out.
We get the benefit of it as well.
Well, they're the best gifts, Anita, aren't they, I must say. But I mean, this is a great gift. But it just didn't go recorded. What about this argument that they seem to be making in the email? These things happen in a live performance. You know, unforeseen things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But why should it be the customer that has to, you know, pay for it? That surely, I don't know whether they could have something built into their insurance, you know, that if that happens. But I think it comes back to the communication, Cormac, that if they had communicated to us when the show will be back on, or if it was going to be back on at all, then we could have made the choice with that information. But we had no information, so we had to make the choice to leave.
Well, I suppose we don't know the full nature of maybe the panic, if there was panic backstage with somebody ill or injured or whatever the case may be, and an ambulance was called. But equally, I suppose, you do have an awful lot of people. I didn't realise the capacity of Bord Gáis was that much. They're saying that 2,100 theatre-goers on the night were there. 1,800 of them, Anita, decided to stay despite the interval being that long. So 300 like you and your partner and your daughter decided to leave. So what happens then to poor old Bord Gáis if they have to give vouchers to 300 customers?
Well, I mean, they're lucky that they don't have 2,000. How many did you say? 2,200?
2,100
altogether. 2,100 people looking for them.
Look, I'll tell you, there are more people who are sharing your experience. 51551, were you at Calamity Jane with the interval that went on and on and on for 90 minutes? Stay with me, Anita. Martin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Colin.
You were at said performance, Martin.
I was at said performance and enjoyed thoroughly the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant. And then, as your previous caller there said, we waited then for the interval, and we were waiting 20 minutes, 30, 40, 40 minutes. The lady came out over the PA and she said that there was a technical issue and the bar would remain open, mm-hmm. exactly as your previous caller said.
Yeah.
Then a little bit later, as in maybe a half an hour later, she came back on and said that due to an ongoing medical emergency, that the show would recommence later.
Okay.
They didn't say how long later was, but there was an added problem in our case, because we had a car parked in the queue park underneath, which for starters cost £43 for the night, which is excessive to start with, but that's a different day's work.
Well, that's a daily race, yeah.
But if we overstayed our due time, we'd have to pay more. And after that, we had to travel back home to Wexford.
Okay, so the clock was ticking for you in terms of the bill, the car park bill as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. So what did you do?
Well, we went home.
You didn't see the second part either?
No, we didn't see the second part.
Oh,
so
goodness.
I was one of the 300 you referred to.
Yeah. And so what's your view on it now, Martin? Is it dem as the brakes, as they say, or would you like some kind of offer?
I would definitely like some kind of offer. Like, we're good customers of Bord Gáis, in spite of paying the £43 for the park underneath, which, by the way, has nothing to do with Bord Gáis themselves.
Yeah.
That's the queue park issue, but like I say, that's a different issue.
That's parking.
But
Dublin,
yes,
yeah.
I would definitely like some kind of recompense, you know, for our bother and for our loyalty.
Yeah, you've gone to Bord Gáis before, shows in that theatre.
Oh, several times,
yeah.
several times.
And you like
indeed.
It,
fantastic. Oh, absolutely love it. Absolutely brilliant. And the performances are all brilliant. I've been at five or six this year so far.
Okay. Well, you don't know what you've missed, Martin and Anita. Stay on the line. Jerry, good afternoon to you.
Unfortunately.
Jerry, good afternoon. I think Jerry can hear me. Jerry, you can hear me, yeah?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
I apologise for that long interval, Jerry, between the hello and your response, but there you go. You were at Calamity Cormac on Liveline. You were at Calamity Jane on Friday.
I was, yeah. And look, just as the other caller said, the first half was great, and we were sitting around there for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and the clock was ticking nicely, and I had no information coming. But look, we were asking around, and eventually we heard technical difficulties, medical emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't sure then what was actually going on. So we stayed put. We had our babysitter sorted for the night, so we were in no rush home. But at the same time, there was a lot of people getting antsy around us.
Really?
Yeah. Now, it was about, I'd say, an hour and 20, an hour and 30 minutes. And we did get notification then to say the show would start in 10 minutes, I think it was. So
okay.
Everybody had that notification to get back to their seats. And, it kicked off in the second half.
And could
went
you
off with a bang. It was amazing, actually.
Was it? And could you remember what happened in the first part after an hour and a half of an interval?
Well, I'd be a big fan of Calamity Jane. So yeah,
you're an historian.
Now, my wife was a bit lost. She wouldn't be as avid fan as me, but sure, look, she got caught up.
But your car park bill, you say, was ticking up as well, Jerry.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing. Yeah, that we had in the back of our minds. You know, it's not cheap per hour down at the board. Gosh, I tell you that. So, by the time we got out, I think we had a 4.5 or 5 hour car park bill. So,
poor old Martin was spending 43 euros, I think you said, Martin, when you left. How much was your car park bill when you arrived after the full show,
Jerry? Something similar, I think. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
if memory serves me right, but. Oh, look, you know, I heard the comments from Bart. Gosh, live shows, these things happen, unexpected. And, it's just one of those things. But, look, the actor that fell ill, his replacement was amazing, to be fair to him.
Really?
You probably have doubts maybe that he wouldn't be as good, but I tell you, he was. And,
okay, I have more colours. Stay with me, Jerry. Could he not have been amazing about half an hour beforehand? I mean, could they not have made the call once the ambulance came to restart the show? I suppose the primary thing, I mean, this is me thinking live on air, the primary concern, obviously, is the welfare of the cast member. Are you jealous, Martin and Anita, having heard Jerry stayed?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely jealous indeed. But like, as your other caller just said there as well, that's the lack of communication. If they had to say, we hope to start in 15 minutes or 20 minutes or something like that, any communication. But they said nothing, only the two announcements. The first one was the technical issue. The second one was the ongoing medical emergency.
Yeah.
And I think there was a delay getting an ambulance. Getting an ambulance to the board. Gosh, now that was just rumours as we were leaving the theatre. Obviously, like hearsay as you're walking out. But apparently, that could have been a delay. You know, there's no ambulance available. It was leaving Sarah Results night. You know, it was busy in Dublin city centre. So, you know, you have to take that into consideration. That. The emergency services couldn't get there as quickly as probably expected.
Well, maybe so. I'm not sure about that either. We're piecing things together slowly but surely here now on Liveline. Stay with me, folks. Colette, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. You were also at Calamity Jane.
I was on Friday, yeah. And I had gone on my own. I actually had got, because it was a sellout, and I got one of those, you know, resale tickets on Ticketmaster.
Oh,
so
yes.
I say... You know, it was a great seat, you know, it was a nice aisle seat and I was looking forward to it and the whole lot. But just like everybody else said, yeah, just the interval, you know, dragged on and on. And, you know, the ushers on the door, obviously they just kept saying we don't know anything because they didn't. But like that, I went outside and asked one of the you know, the managers or whatever, and they mentioned, you know, so I kind of had to reason with myself, right, I'll wait another 10 minutes. But at an hour and 10 minutes, I kind of said, right, well, I've seen the first half. It's fantastic. I know the story. You know, I just have to take the calculated risk and leave.
Oh,
and like
no.
Your other caller, when I was leaving, I saw the ambulance coming. But then I thought, right, there's going to be another 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, before, you know, so anyway, and like that, I had to go to my car and I, you know, didn't fancy walking up the keys at midnight or anything like that. So, yeah, it was a pity. And
it is a pity. Calamity Jane. My God, there's calamity calls here. Who dropped the phone there?
Oh, no, that's the modem. Standing beside the modem for a session.
Oh, well, this is Calamity Calls on Liveline. I can tell you about Calamity Jane. So you decided to leave. This is, I mean, let me put the call out again because the stories are so interesting and the reasons why people left. Were you at Calamity Jane on Friday? Did you stay or did you go after a prolonged interval? And are you looking for some kind of recompense? Are you, Colette?
Well, I like that. I shot off an email as well and asked for, you know, what arrangements there will be for the refund. Now, I hadn't obviously read the terms and conditions like your caller, so I presume, you know, there obviously is a get out clause there. I mean, like that, the tickets weren't overly expensive. It was about 50 euro. But I mean, as you say, if you had a group of four and you were buying the popcorn and the T-shirts and the car parking and all that kind of business, it would certainly have, you know, racked up for people, you know. So, it probably won't happen. I mean, it'd be nice if they
You'd like some kind of gesture, would you?
Just even you know, they acknowledged that it did cause a lot, because actually people were leaving before me. You know what I mean? You know, I'd say people just definitely, as I say, hedged their bets and figured, right, you know, we're not getting any information here, we might as well pull out. And I would have thought as well, I don't know, you know, kind of like concerts, maybe they have to finish a performance at a certain time. So that was another one of my factors. Well, you know,
yeah, although you'd imagine, though, that it's confined within the theatre. So, yeah, I don't know if that condition applies. But it's a fair old point, I must say, Colette. I'm saying we're piecing things together slowly but surely. Colette and Jerry and Martin and Anita and others who are calling us to 51551, we mentioned that the show had a prolonged interval because of an illness. And it's one of the cast members, the great Vinnie Coyle, who has posted actually on Instagram about all of this. Can I read it to you? And by all accounts, sure. Vinnie, our thoughts are with you if you're listening to the programme, and I hope you're making a full recovery. But the post on Instagram from the superb Vinnie Coyle is as follows. During last night's show, so this has been posted about 2 days ago. During last night's show, he says, I collapsed at the end of Act 1. I'm unsure of what caused this fall. However, this caused a large blow to my head, and I was in and out of consciousness for over an hour. After being taken to Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, I was given the best medical care. The nurses and doctors were truly exceptional, he says. Left with severe concussion and neck pain, I was discharged this morning and I'll now be returning home to recover for the foreseeable. My God, that is the human side of all of this. And I know your stories are completely genuine and so on. Vinnie played Wild Bill Hickok. But, I mean, it's worrying for Vinnie, and I'm sure he's glad of the medical care at Vincent's Hospital and so on. But, I mean, Colette, from his perspective, I mean, certainly, does that change your view of things at all?
Well, obviously, you know, everybody's concern was for the, you know, for the welfare of, I mean, we didn't know, you know, who, which actor, you know, was injured. And I mean, it's quite an active show, you know what I mean? And they are leaping up and down off chairs and all that kind of business. You know, absolutely. And obviously, if you have concussion, there'll probably be a certain amount of recovery time. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's Vinnie's case. We wish him all the best. But Martin, in one sense, do you know, does that change your perspective on things, of asking for a voucher and all? It's obviously the primary worry of Bord Gáis management to say, is the performer, is the actor okay? And we'll deal with the crowd in just a second. Is that fair?
I suppose it's fair enough, Cormac. All right, like everybody else says there, the primary concern there is for the actor concerned. But at the same time, nonetheless, it keeps informed of what's going on. Like that would have gone a long ways towards alleviating the not knowing of anything, you know. Mm. But I think a little bit of recognition of our plight, if you like, would be nice to have some little bit of recompense, maybe a free ticket or something else, or a reduced price ticket or something else, or just to acknowledge, you know, our loyalty above everything else.
Yeah, you see, Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, look, there is a question here maybe you'd like to pick up on again, having heard the stories from Anita and Martin and Colette especially, and Jerry, who stayed. You all seem pretty loyal to the theatre to me. You all say you enjoyed not just the first part of this performance, but previous performances as well. You're all saying that you could have done with more communication on the night, notwithstanding the medical emergency. Is it not?
Absolutely.
I mean, is it not too much to ask for to have a little bit of communication with people who've made a sacrifice, who've paid good money and saved good money to pay for tickets and so on? Is there any way, Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, you could rethink this a little bit? Yeah, this is a plea from me on behalf of the listeners. Maybe there isn't. I don't know. But Anita and Martin and Jerry and Colette, thank you very much indeed. If there's anyone else who'd like to share their story of Calamity Jane and the prolonged interval on Friday, 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Well, you're very welcome back. 51551 for sure. It was a meltdown for the ages, and the world, the sports world, is talking about it. Nick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cormac. How are you?
Not too bad. Have you ever seen anything like this in a long, long time?
No, I think it was an absolute disgrace. Like, we're in the US Open. There's a match point against Medvedev. I think it's the second service, and the photographer moves down along the side of the court. The referee interrupted it, and by the rules, he's entitled to first serve again. And then Medvedev kicked off, started calling the, asking the referee whether he was a man or not. He incited the crowd to start booing. He started insulting the photographer, saying he gets paid by the match rather than the hour. A six-minute delay ensued, and eventually, he won that point. But eventually he lost the game, and at the end of it, if anybody goes online and looks at it, you see him sitting at his chair, and he's got his racket, and he smashes it 10 times and puts it into smithereens. So it's not a good look. I think these guys are making a fortune, and they've got a responsibility to uphold the character of the game. And it's not just in tennis. It's across all other sports, golf, soccer, you name it. And I think the other thing is that these guys don't realize or they don't care about it. And we've all done it when we were kids. We all wanted to be the next Messi, or we all wanted to be the next Bjorn Borg. And monkey see, monkey do. And these kids will think it's appropriate behavior.
Yeah.
And then the final thing I suppose people overlook as well is, regardless of what they're doing or where they're doing it, they're representing their country, so it's a bad reflection on their country. So I think it's been creeping into international sports and certainly professional sports.
Do you think so? I mean, we're not talking about any Johnny-come-lately here. This is Daniel Medvedev, who's a former, I don't think he's number one, he's a former world number one in tennis. I have rarely seen a meltdown like it on the tennis circuit. I thought those days were over since John McEnroe, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, and if you look at it, John McEnroe was tame in comparison to that. John McEnroe was driven by passion. It was like he would question the call.
You cannot be serious, Nick. You cannot be serious. But I mean,
exactly.
But the question about role models, them being role models, is fair enough. But is it not? I know you're a top class international swimmer yourself, Nick O'Hare. So I know the quality of geezer I'm talking to here when I ask this question. When I ask this question, is it not understandable though? You're putting so much effort and preparation and mental preparation, and then a photographer runs up along the line. Surely you'll lose it.
No, look, you're going to be annoyed. By all means, you're going to be annoyed. But to incite a crowd, to get them booing for 6 minutes, to smash a racket in that way, it's unacceptable no matter what you think. You mentioned my own swimming. Like I trained with a gentleman by the name of Gary Hall Jr. He's world famous in swimming across three Olympics. Yeah, and it was just me and Gary in the pool with a coach back in 95, 96. Gary's got 11 medals, 8 of them are gold, and I've never once seen him react like that. And, you know, you can go back years, Mark Spitz never did it, Arnold Palmer never did it, Gary Niklas never did it, and even, you know, more in the more recent past, if you look at probably our best sporting ambassador over the last 20 years, Padraig Harrington, absolute gentleman on and off the course. So, you know, when you're making millions, and you're in such a privileged position, you've got to behave appropriately.
Ah, but I mean, what about Cristiano Ronaldo, for example, who has a little bit of a meltdown, or at his peak had a meltdown at every match, at every cross?
Yeah, and that's something that's crept into the game. And it's interesting, I had a discussion with one of the sports journalists in RTE, we won't name him, but he said it's part of the game. But like, where in the game's rules or the game's history does that come into it? Where has that been published and so on? So, you know, people will push the boundaries all the time and they'll try to gain an unfair advantage and so forth. And the problem probably lies with the governing bodies, the referees, the organisations. So if you look at, for instance, in Ireland, the Camogie All-Ireland final there a couple of weeks ago, which I watched. My mother was from Galway and I was born in Galway, so obviously cheering for the Maroons.
Yeah, yeah.
And just before half-time, a Galway player came up to a Cork player, nudged him in the back, and the Cork lady turned around and gave her a left hook that you could see in any
championships.
Sent off immediately. Yeah. But there's no repercussion for these guys. So they're fined. And if you take it to Gov, there's a gentleman by the name of, I wouldn't call him a gentleman actually, but Tyrrell Hatton, who's renowned for his bad behaviour. And he was at a press conference last year and they asked him how much he'd been fined. And he just started laughing. And the reason he's laughing is you find these guys 30, 50, 100,000, half a million.
Yeah.
It's pocket change to these guys. So unless I think the authorities, you know, take a stance on this and, you know, ban people from their next tournament and so on, it may be slightly draconian, but it's something that's crept in. And my fear for it is the kids coming up who try to emulate.
Okay, well, I'll say two things on that, right? Firstly, I don't think it's fair to lump in the poor old Cork, as a Galway person, to lump in the poor old Cork camogie player with all these players. And I think it was the referee thought it was outside the rules, but I wouldn't say it was too rough. But I'll say this, though. In terms of repercussions for professional sports people and so on, I just wonder if it's the mommy and the daddy on the sideline that's taking their cue from the professional sports people who act up and who are telling their sons and daughters playing the match, and they're on the sideline, keep talking, don't take that off the referee, get stuck in, speak up for yourself. I mean, that happens more often than the child acting up.
It does, yeah. But one really good example to I suppose refer to is rugby. And we've all seen rugby, and you've seen these giants of men, like 6'10", 7 feet.
Yeah.
And when they're being reprimanded by the referee, they're like a little schoolboy. And the respect is there, the respect not only for the players, but also for the referee. And what the referee says goes. But they've also got a respect for the game and the tradition of the game.
Okay.
And unfortunately, this is what's being lost. And it's this whole let's win at all costs kind of stuff. Like, you win at all costs, but you win at all costs to yourself, not to the detriment of others.
Okay.
So when you're training at that level and so on, you put your body through hell and you put your mind through hell, and that's fine and that's your decision to make. But it's not about cheating. It's not about trying to gain an unfair advantage. Mm-hmm. And those lines have been blurred significantly over the last number of years.
Can I say this to you? My reaction to the Daniel Medvedev sports meltdown was more of understanding. And I said, look, of course you're going to lose it sometimes, but you have a very different reaction, and you're talking about the knock-on effect, the role model effect for kids and so on. When I put my sporting achievements up against your sporting experience and achievements, Nick O'Hare, I think there's only one winner here.
It's not about sporting achievements. It doesn't matter what level you're at. It doesn't matter what level you're at. As you said, you know, the under-10s or under-8s, Carnmore hurling down in Galway, where my mother was from. You know, they're as passionate about it as the professionals. So it doesn't matter what level you're at.
Yeah.
So the rules should apply to all and the behaviour should apply to
all. Okay, I'd love to know if people feel the same. 51551. Nick, good to talk to you and thank you very much indeed. It was a shocking sports meltdown. Let me know your reaction if you agree with Nick O'Hare.